Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty, two-thirds of the original team that channeled the Law of One material. Please visit our website, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Well, Carla and Jim, I hear you are sweating it out up there with triple digits. How's it going up there?
People are melting and eggs are frying on the sidewalk and cars are overheating and we don't know what to do.
Oh, dear. Well, I tell you what we do in Texas. You get out and you turn on the hose and you squirt yourself with water. Or you get to a river and you jump in.
Doesn't that sound like a great thing to do? I remember doing that as a kid, too, playing in the hose all afternoon.
Yeah. That's about all you can do. Well, at least, you know, I know over there in Colorado they've got it even worse, and I sure hope they get some rain. That was us last year, so. Whew. But we'll definitely keep them in our prayers. Did y'all have any quick announcements before we start off?
I don't think so. We're adding to our little tiny little tweaks here and there to our homecoming plans. We now have purchased an L&L homecoming ice cream maker.
And, really?
I am told by Gary that we're going to have to practice making these recipes a lot to make sure that they're okay for homecoming before we get to that date. And I told him, we'd have to suffer through it.
You know, for some bizarre reason, when you started to say we had purchased an L&L research, for a split second, I thought you were going to say blimp. I don't know why I just got this image. LL Research, homecoming, up in the air.
That's an idea.
Of course, if you look down on us from above, all you'd see is the tent top. We sit under a great big tent top. It's open on the side.
Well, let's hope it's not that hot by then.
Let's hope so, yeah.
Okay. Now, what is the date of homecoming, just in case people are wondering?
It's over Labor Day weekend. It ends on Labor Day. So if you feel like, you know, embracing that three-day weekend and coming on over here to the back of beyond to enjoy a weekend with people that are probably like you and probably will understand you more than the people that are close to you in your old hometown, please come on. It's called homecoming for a reason. There are a lot of wanderers here on earth, and even people that don't feel like they're wanderers, but they have the same problems. And they get here for a weekend, and by the end of the weekend, they just don't want to go home. You know, it's just so nice to be loved and cherished as an individual for yourself and to be listened to for what you have to say without somebody judging you or condemning you. It just doesn't happen here. So, and of course, we do try to get some study in. If everybody that wants to share in the sharing of information and research can do so. I will speak, Jim will speak, other people will speak. But the main thing of it really is the people. This is the person to person to person to person knitting up of the raveled sleeve of the larger self, you know, of those entities that we came here as part of, the larger social memory complexes that we were part of back home, shall we say. It's a lovely place to come, and it's a lovely place to be that time of year or most times of year. Just don't come here in February. Other than that, but at any rate, it's that weekend, and we'd welcome you. We welcome you with open arms and a big hug.
So is it still open to new people then?
Yeah, we haven't filled up our seats yet.
Okay. If anyone wants to check that out, you can go to bringforth.org. That's bring4th.org, and go to forum 2. Well, it's spelled out, but forum 2, and then go to meetup area, and there's a thread called Homecoming 2012 information, so you can get everything you need to know, or you can just go to llresearch.org for information on that.
Either way.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and do our opening riff tonight. It's a pretty lengthy, in-depth reading from session 49.7. Questioner, will you recommend a technique of meditation? I am Ra. No.
That seems funny because it's short, but I think it's one of the most profound negations in the book. You know, I mean, every time you start to get a little bit of pride going, the Ra group will find a gentle and polite and sweet way of saying, it doesn't really matter. And when you say, if it doesn't really matter, what are you talking about it for? And they say, you got to talk about something between now and when you die. And, you know, it's like that with the Ra group. They'll let you know their opinion. They'll embroider on it if you ask, and they did below. But they don't change their mind, and they don't lose their sense of humor at any time. They don't recommend any technique of meditation. They simply recommend meditation. They recommend silence, inner silence. When I say silence, I'm not talking about what goes on outside of your body, because I don't care if you're one block from a freight train track or a state truck route or whatever the noise that you have to listen to, a baby crying. There is no... There's no thing that you can do, no quality you can invoke that will enable you to become silent in your inner self, except a serious decision to begin to do so, and to do so now. After that primary decision, every day you're faced with an responsibility on it, an honor duty that you did not before have. You're faced with the honor and the duty of becoming an electrically, profoundly alive, magical being. Your electrical body or your chakra body or your inner body is a far deeper expression of yourself, far closer to the essence of yourself than your outer appearance as time goes on, more and more, I would say. But none of it matters when someone who has opened up that inner door of silence opens their mouth. You hear the silence that surrounds her words. You hear the silence that surrounds her poor efforts at attempting to share the value of becoming quiet. You hear the first part of a magical equation, which only you can solve. U plus X equals a maturing human being, in the sense of being a spiritual person. You can go through life as a mind-body complex and not be any closer to having the spiritual maturity at the end than you were at the beginning. Because the fact that the body is a creature of the mind, you'll probably be either an intellectual or you'll let the whole thing go and be a slob. But in order to move into those really glorious realms that are unknown to those who haven't tried it, you simply have to do it. You have to make up your mind and say, you know, I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it. Quit nagging. And then you do every day of your life. And you're the one that nags you because you've made up your mind that that's what you want. You go into that inner room that's talked about in the Bible. And you come out of that inner room with an energy that you never had before. Because you have tasted the deeps of consciousness. And those deeps flow powerfully, but ever so quietly. And they enable you to move through those deep waters with far and far more ease every time you go into that silence. Now, how do you go into the silence? You simply stop talking. You stop talking, you close your mouth. That's the beginning. Then when you start thinking something, you realize you're thinking something, and you let it go without noticing it, without following it. You immediately think of something else. This is the first time, the first period of meditation can be very frustrating because you're not used to sitting still and doing nothing. Eventually, your body gets the idea that your mind really does want you to think of nothing and simply to have meditation, and so you do much better. If you cannot sit still, then the next thing to do is to move into a more active mode where you are walking in nature or you're following some kind of a hiking schedule or a sports schedule. I can tell you for sure that without meditation, my life would have been far different. And I can't tell you why, because it's not intellectual. I just know that the person I am has been greatly improved by my doing the work. Monica, you or Jim, have anything you want to add to that?
I don't.
I don't think I could add anything to that that would be nearly as edifying as what you had to share, Carla.
Well, in that case, I'm glad that the roof was short. Because I talked my head off.
Well, I guess I could say one thing. I changed my mind. I think each person has an ability to meditate that is probably unique to that person. The general way that Carla suggested of finding the silence is most helpful. But then I think that each person can embroider upon that in his or her own way so that you develop your own way of finding the silence, of existing in a silence, and of opening that door that Ross speaks about, that you that silence is actually the key to that door, and that you go through, and then there are various infinite types of experiences that you may have in meditation, depending upon your intention for the meditation. In general, most people think about meditation as being a way of achieving a stillness within and sort of awaiting an inspiration or a message or an illumination of some sort, and that may indeed be what occurs. But then some people go into meditation for the hope for experience of sending healing energy to someone, of visualizing a hope for outcome. There are many ways of meditating and many reasons for meditating, so I think that each person can look forward to being able to develop his or her own way and means of meditating.
That's true. I think all the an activist would choose a different means than a person that was used to being quiet, probably.
I have a question. I've had some young people ask me this question, and I didn't know how to answer it. And I've seen it in a number of young people that I don't know if it's because they're dual activated or their brains just work differently, maybe because they've been brought up in a high-tech environment and they're accustomed to rapid information, you know, with the computers and the video games. And, you know, they just seem to process information a lot faster. But what they've told me is that they find it difficult to meditate because they have, like, several trains of thought going on at the same time. Their minds are just racing. And it was described like going through a subway, you're on a subway train and you see the doors, you know, you're passing by the subway station and you see, you know, the doors just flashing by, you know, or you're driving at high speed and you see the buildings flashing by. That's how the thoughts are in their mind, and they just can't seem to turn it off. And I was at a loss because my brain doesn't work that way. Do you have any suggestions for people with that kind of?
Well, I would simply point out to somebody like that they're playing with their intellect, that they're having fun with their intellect, and that's a choice that you make. And I'll tell you, for truly, you can have a great deal of fun and make all kinds of distinctions and variations and reasons why and so forth. You're just not into the silence. Jim, you want to help me with that?
Well, I think that's right. It's in a technologically oriented world today, it's so easy to become intellectually stimulated with so much of what's available. It's just overwhelming almost. And I think that you're right, Monica. I think that some of the younger folks are wired differently than those of us in the older generations. I think they are wired to deal with this, and they probably primed that pre-incarnatively to be able to handle all the information that's available in the world. But then I think with that increased ability to intellectually process information, also it can be kind of a liability in that it's hard to rein in that super mind, and it takes a little extra effort and determination and realization that there is a good reason for reining it in, so that you are in charge of your mind and your mind doesn't carry you away. So I think that with that increased ability to mentally process information comes also the challenge of being able to quiet that mind and to take charge of that mind and to let other means of perception take precedence over the mental computations. And it's more of a challenge, I think. And I think that there has to be more of a determination and a dedication by such a person in order to find the silence that surpasses all understanding.
Yeah, it is a lot more of a challenge. And if somebody's of high intellect will feel threatened, well, he'll just tell you that the only way that you can go is by using the intellect. And that what if you let go of one of those, you know, trains you were on, maybe it would run into the other trains and so forth and so on. But the truth of it is, if you can move into the humble region within, which you use to empty yourself and thereby open yourself to being used by the Creator the way the Creator would like to use you, is to explore that silence. You can get a tremendous amount, you can get an infinite amount of stuff from your intellect, and you can play with it forever. And as someone who's IQ test ran off the I ran off the scale at 200 three or four times. It just, I don't have a lot. I don't have a lot of patience, with somebody else with a big brain that says, well, my brain is so big, it has all the answers. Well, you know, the brain can look at all the answers. The brain cannot be all the answers. We are looking to become part of the essence of things, not to play with the surface bubbles in our little piece of the waters of life. When once we decide that we want to be of service to other people, let me put it that way, put it in the ground that it has to grow from, the only reasons that you would be meditating are, number one, that you feel that you need to, just because you want to, number two, that you feel that you need to because it's part of what you need to do in order to become smarter, better, wiser, more mature. No, something, some urge has to be within you for you to start it. It doesn't usually start casually. And if it does start casually, then there's a moment at which it switches over into being, you know, this is the way I live my life. It goes down to that level. So I think that, I respect what people can do with their brains, and I love the wonderful puzzles and jigsaws and the stories that we can create and all the characters that we can think of. And, you know, I love all that. It's wonderful stuff. It's the art of the world. It's the poetry of the world. I'm part of that. At the same time, there is an essence within which one finds either with connecting with one's art or muse. Some people don't have to try to connect. It's connecting with them so much that they have trouble hanging on to, you know, the grounding of regular life. And that goes all the way from the span to people who could be bothered less by meditating. So you have all these different people that's going to hit everybody differently. So I guess what I tell somebody that is playing so much with his intellect is that it will, if he sits down and carefully looks at every thought he has, after a while he's going to find that he can relate every thought to every other thought, and that it's all relative. Once you see that everything is relative to everything and that it's all one, and that you start talking about one thing ending up talking about another and it doesn't make any difference really, once you get a hold of that sort of feel for the way the cosmos works, that it is all one, and that, you know, you're just playing with your intellect. This is lovely things for your intellect to play with, and it's great, but that's what it is. And in the deeps of the waters of life are where the mystics of all religions come together, and what the mystics say inevitably is tabernacle with your creator, be alone with your God, be silent.
Oh, well, what I'm hearing you say is, okay, well, let me back up a second. In this particular case, this group of young people were definitely of higher intellect, but they were actually asking me the same question that Don had asked Ra. You know, they were looking for a technique because they were trying to turn off the mental
right.
chatter, and they were having trouble doing that, and I was at a loss. And so what I'm hearing you say is, Jim, I'm hearing you say it's more of a discipline thing, and Carla, what I'm hearing you say is it's more of a humbleness, that a desire that needs to be there, and then it'll happen. Is that right? In
well,
other
I
words,
guess so. He's approaching it from the what it takes to do the job. I'm approaching it from what you would be in order to what it takes. You know, he's saying, okay, you need to do this, and I'm saying you need to be like this. But it's really the same discussion. Excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat. Is going do weep. Jim, you want to lay any light on this Murphy subject?
Well, that's interesting because I was just going to share the technique that I use, and it involves light. sitting in the silence, visualizing innerly with your eyes closed, I look between, you know, at the brow area, and I look for any source of light. And whatever light I can see, I focus on that until it becomes the field of vision. And then after a while, that field of vision has its own brighter light that, again, you can focus on and continue looking for the light in your field of vision and continue following it. And in that way, I think that, for me, that's been a helpful way of taming the mind, slowing the mind down, and finding the silence.
That's pretty much what I do. Okay, thank you. Thank you both. Okay, actually, we do have some questions for tonight, but real quick, before I go to the first question, I want to read a comment that was posted by Neutral333 on the Bring Forth Forum, and this person said, "Ra, Don, Carla, and Jim changed my life. Just wanted to step back for a moment and give credit where credit is due. I was raised communist, Maoist, atheist. My mom gave me the raw material, and it immediately brought magic, that's the best word I can find presently, into my life. The truth was undeniable to me. Not only that, these truths were confirmed through multitudes of so-called coincidences, which I now see as merely synchronicity." So, just wanted to read that little acknowledgement.
Thanks a lot.
And thanks.
Yeah, you know, Gary's keeping track of those. So if you'd send a, he's got it on the front of my computer, so I can't forget it, you know. If the message is either an offer of service, a wanderer story, or a testimonial, or a note of gratitude, copy the text of the message and email it to Gary. So
I will do that.
Yeah, you do that. Okay, what did people ask this week?
Our first question is from Ed. "Dear Carla and Monica and Jim, first I would like to wish Carla much more improved health and fast recovery. Now, I seem to have noticed that ever since I've been reading and studying the Law of One and the sessions found at LL Research, and since my own personal recovery from cancer 2 years ago, I have so much increased my ESP abilities and have experienced many synchronicities in all manners of life. As we approach the end of 2012, this seems only to have intensified. Is this a trend that you've noticed from others as well, or is it peculiar to myself? I was wondering, too, about what I can do to help others, as I know that there will be some serious changes lying ahead and without violating their free will. How do I go about helping them without violating their free will?" This is from Ed.
Hey, Ed. It's really good to talk to you. This is Carla. Thank you very much for your kind wishes. I'm very glad that you're a survivor. Congratulations. That means a whole lot. You've struggled through the waters, by golly, and you're on the good side, coming out, dripping wet. I'm so glad. You say that that experience, that things seem to be easier to see, and you've increased your ESP abilities and experienced many synchronicities, and many things have happened from spirit that just basically tell you, okay, you're on the right track. And does this happen to others? Yeah, it happens to others periodically, or more yes than no. Some people have this happen to them a lot, and they have no control of it. Other people can pray and have results from prayer. Other people really don't know what you're talking about, and that's okay. It's something that is either a gift or a somewhat buried natural instinct to turn to prayer. Everybody has the gift. Not everybody has that natural urge to go to one's knees. It's sort of like, I'm not going to go down to my knees for anybody, much less a God I can't see and don't know about. Well, so what can you do to help others without violating their free will? If somebody asks you a question, share anything that you possibly can that might be helpful to him, and have no attachment to the outcome. And if the person doesn't ask you, then simply live your life. And if it's one of these deals where you see the guy every day, work with this person, whatever, you can always listen for the opportunity to drop a little Johnny Appleseed type thought. You know, all is one, We're all made of love. We're all here to love each other. You can drop thoughts like that that are very leading, that lead one, I would think, pretty firmly towards towards the law of one or towards spiritual seeking. So listen for those times. But if those times don't come, be content to know that it is the unseen things that are essential to you, the way you allow the light to shine through you, that makes you helpful in a global or planetary sense. It isn't what you can do in an outer sense that will soon show up on some board that gives you credit for having done something. It's not like that. You don't get credit for moving through those disciplines of personality that create of you the best you that can possibly be. On the other hand, without them, everything that you do is less than if you had the inner, spiritual infrastructure that allows you to let it all go, to let all of the pride, all of the judgment of yourself and others just go, so that you may just sit quietly with your Creator. If it's only a 15-second sit, it's still in that kind of time space figure. That's a very fairly long period. That's going to make a difference. I think that probably the moment that you can say I've been meditating too long is different for everybody. But if you find yourself desperately drawn into meditation in a place where it's not appropriate, then you know you've gone too far and you're going to have to pull back. But I would think 5 or 10 minutes in the morning, 5 or 10 minutes in the afternoon are sufficient for you to gain the uses of meditation. And those of you who like it are going to be drawn to doing much more of it. Now, there are weekend retreats of all kinds, just hundreds and hundreds of these all over the United States, all over the world, and you could probably go to one every weekend of your life and be educated 9 ways from Sunday, and it would be a lot of fun. See, have we come back to what can we do to help each other without violating their free will? Free will is much more important for them than you're getting something across to them. Hold the things that are true to you true for others. You know, people say do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's not quite right. It's do unto others as you would have others do unto you, or as you would have do unto this person as this person would have you do unto him. If you do unto others in the way that you prefer, it isn't nearly as much of a gift as if you patiently and thoughtfully get to know that person, so that when you do enter into that person in some powerful way, that it is his way to enter in rather than your way that you're pushing. But in general, just have the faith that you are helping them, period, with your essence, with who you are, I think. Jim, got a helping voice there?
Well, you know, unless you have power over the person, they're a subordinate at work or a child or whatever, if they're an equal, I think it's kind of hard to infringe on their free will because they can always ignore you. You know, unless you have some special power over them, just share from your heart. I think if you go into a sharing like this without any desire to change a mind, simply sharing from your joyful at this that you have to share, and you want to, give it away. That's a type of attitude that really doesn't have the ability to infringe on free will.
Okay. Very good. I'm going to go to our next question, and I want to let our listeners know that you can call in if you'd like to join the call. You can call in at 646-595-2294. 646-595-2294. Press the 1 key if you'd like to join the show. And you're listening to In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. And our next question is from Storm Shadow. And I think you already answered it partially, Carla, but it has to do with meditation. First, Storm Shadow says, thanks for answering my question from last week. I've been meditating more or less regularly for 10 minutes a session. The Casey readings recommend an hour a day, which is impossible given my work schedule, but I have a feeling I should be doing more. Have you found an optimal length per daily session in your experience?
I have not found an optimum length, no. I have found that it's different for every person. I think the minimum length is about 5 or 10 minutes twice a day, and that's what Jim and I do because, you know, it's a busy, busy world, and you have to get moved from that into the world of making money to pay your bills and that kind of thing, creating a home, making food. You know, all these little details, all those have to be seen, too, also. There are people that instinctively just move towards meditation and love it, and whether they know what the name of it is or not, they're doing it all their lives, and it's just a... it's just part of their lives, and there are other people that have to work really, really hard, but they're called to work hard, so they will probably, you'll probably find them in the misty dawn, huddled under a cover and happily ensconced with their creator. I can't remember a nicer experience than getting up about 4:30 one morning when I was teaching at a Buddhist retreat. It was one of the sessions that Barbara Brodsky and I had for co-channeling Aaron and Kuo. And I was just not sleeping well that night. I wasn't feeling well. And I got up and I pulled my blanket with me and I went outside to the place where meditation was going on, and there must have been 20 people there in the tiny gray shadows of the coming dawn, sitting there huddled under their blankets, and I huddled with them, and it was the most peaceful and calm and spacious place. It was a lovely place, and you know, getting there, if you could get there, you'd want to do it 6 hours a day, 10 hours a day. Give me some time. Not everybody has the ability or the desire to meditate that much. So you'll have to experiment for yourself. But I would say with sincereness and no hypocrisy, 5 minutes twice a day will move you towards silence, inner silence. Don't you think, Jim?
Oh, definitely. Don used to say that he always felt that he was in a state of meditation. I think what he was talking about was a mindfulness or a remembrance that we are spiritual beings and we are interacting with other spiritual beings and we have higher purposes than just the mundane activities of our daily round of activities, that we are here to learn and to serve. And I think that after a while, that becomes so much a part of your being. After you've, you know, been a seeker for so long, and you've intended to be of service, and you don't know exactly how you're doing, but after a while, you just have this feeling that you're in the flow. You're moving with the way things should be, and that what is happening should be happening, and that if you pay attention to everything, that each moment can offer you that state of meditation, so that it doesn't have to be just sitting in the silence at, you know, a certain time each day. Though that is extremely helpful, I think that also we can be in a meditative state throughout our day and keep that mindfulness with us. And it's a it's sort of a coloration and a vibration that we carry with us. And other people can become aware of it, and we become aware of it in other people too. You know, there are certain people you really like to be around because they just have this little vibe about them, and just the countenance is shining as if it's, you know, some part of the sun. So I think that meditation can expand in our lives and become a part of every moment.
That's wonderful.
Okay.
Not only do I agree with you on that, but I find it hard. I've always found it hard to do that all the time.
Okay. That was some good information there. Our next question is from Cyan. How long do you, on average, see as the healing rebalancing period for new channelers to get adjusted to the concept of channeling and what it entails for the death-life transition and its reevaluation?
Hey, Cyan. It's so good to be vibrating in contact with you. I send my love to you and my blessings. And let me tackle this question. There has to be a fairly long period, I think, when you begin, where you realize you are at the beginning of a steep learning curve. And you do a lot of listening. You're constantly, you know, entirely aware that you're not getting everything and so forth and so on. And then, you know, the odd thing of it is that after almost, 40 years, let's see, from 74 to 2012, it's 38 years. After 38 years of channeling, I can honestly say that I still feel that I need to do better. And that, you know, I need to put more time in on just tabernacling with the Creator so that I can adjust myself better when I come to tune for a channeling session. I know what you mean about 10 minutes a session being what you can do and an hour a day being what you can't do. The best thing to do with that is not to worry about it. 10 minutes a day, morning and evening, shoot, that's going to get you there. What you might look out for is if you're involved in a church or a synagogue, a lot of times they'll have quiet days or days of meditation and prayer on days that fit that within their liturgical year. And those are wonderful things to catch because everybody that's there is there for the same reason. And just look around, it puts available in your town, you're going to find some meditation possibilities. If you have a feeling you should be doing more, try to do a little more. You can try, for instance, in walking. I have found it very helpful at times when I wish to be less prideful, and I caught myself being prideful. I would walk at this very ancient walk that its Latin equivalent was chanted silently by many brothers of the Christian faith as they went from task to task, and they would walk in rhythm with, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of the living God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Lord Jesus Christ, Son of the living God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And if you walk and you say that over and over again, it pretty much drains the pride right out of you. And you can think of so many other things. Of course, I'm a singer, and that helps a lot. But I'll start singing, This is the day which the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. And I can, you know, get through the hardest task. And just, you know, moving to the rhythm of that song. So if you feel that you need to do more in that scale of meditation and you don't have time, then what you need to do is change the definition of meditation to include something else that you're doing. I mean, you're driving in your car. You can also be chanting in your car. It's wonderful. There's some wonderful chants to learn. Living light, oh, living light, light that springs perpetually from, remember that chant? I love that chant. Anyway, there are so many wonderful things. Paramahansa Yogananda's fellowship has a wonderful little booklet of songs that he used to sing, and I've stolen several of those for my own personal use. So try the chanting, because there's bound to be a time in your life when you're going to do chores, and that's pretty dead time. But you can look and watch for other cars and be safe and everything and still be going, living light, oh, living light, light that perpetuates beyond the stars. You know, it's over and over again, and it lifts you. It lifts your vibration to a place where you'd like it to go. I think you might find that to be so. Any other suggestions?
No, I like that. I like the chants and the songs, and actually moving the body in rhythm, too, as you're doing that. I think the rhythmic movement and the rhythmic chanting has a way of entraining the mind and helping the silence to come in as the rhythm silences the static in our lives.
Okay, thank you. Our next question is from Indolering. I hope I'm saying that right. Indolering. How do you envision the harvest to manifest? Rapidly over a period of days or more slowly over months and years? When approximately will we begin to see these manifestations? And do you believe any third density life will still exist here after the harvest?
Yes. I think we probably will be seeing some third density people here after the harvest, because there are two harvests going on, not one. One harvest is the harvest of the planet itself, the physical entity, the planet Earth. That planet has been coming through the years of development to bring us a brand new baby, fourth density planet Earth. And we had readings as early as 2001 that said the baby is alive. It is weak, but it is alive and it is doing well. And so that had already begun forming. And I think you'll have to say we've seen lots and lots of demonstrations of the necessary companions to the bringing in of the vibrations of fourth density, which at the time when Ra was speaking 30 years ago were swearing absolutely terribly with positive polarity. It was obvious to everybody that it was going to become a negative polarity planet. And there was a great fuss about all of this. But through the years, I started getting readings where people would write in saying that, you know, they had begun a meeting group, or they had begun a study group. And, you know, it pops up hundreds of them over each year, people that have begun to study together. And, you know, the great thing, I think, that it helps us move forward is to have a group. If you possibly are in that luxury where you can find a group with which to meditate, even if it's only one other person, that sets you on a whole different track towards spiritual maturity. And so it takes a while. But the harvest of each of us is something different than the harvest of planet Earth. The harvest of each of us, I believe, will come when we die. And I believe that a lot of us that are here now will probably make fourth density positive polarity. I think that the message of love has gotten out with our group, other groups, thousands of other groups. I don't mean to put ours up there first. Ours is, you know, like the least of all. But they're all striving to open the light, to allow the light to come in. And really allowing the light to come in is a matter, as I've said before, of letting everything else empty out and letting ourselves be tuned up into that light so that we can be transparent to it and so that we can carry it and it can shine forth from us. So, you know, if somebody sees the light first and doesn't even know who I am, that's fine with me. Let them find the light, and I would totally be satisfied. I don't know just how long the harvest is going to manifest here. I think that given the lifespan of people on Earth, it's probably going to be within 100 years or so. I don't believe third density people that are not dual activated will come back here. This is the last incarnation, I think, for everybody that's just plain third density. I think we're all ready to go on. Or we're all ready to have 75,000 more years of the same. That's a thought. I think, didn't the Law of One book say that there were going to be somewhere between 350 and 700 years or something? Am I remembering those?
The years that I remember were between 100 and 700, but then we also got information that suggested that the harvest started, the time started shortly after World War II. So we're already 60 to 70 years into that 100 to 700 year period. And the reason there's such a wide variation in time is that people make choices as individuals and as groups and populations, and those choices can cause, you know, either a more rapid speeding up of the harvest or a slowing down, depending upon how the choices go. And I think that, you know, just the feeling that I have is that in general that there is a more lightening of the planet. There is an enlightening of individuals and groups so that people are moving in various ways towards being of service and of opening to light and allowing their hearts to open and sharing love with other folks. So, you know, who knows exactly what the time is? I mean, I don't think anybody can know exactly what the time is, but I think it's somewhere around 100 years probably. And we're...
One thing to say about this is I personally feel there's nothing to fear. Now, I would say that even if we all were going to be taken in the flash of a twinkling of an eye, like some of the more fundamentalist of Christians believe, I don't think so. It could happen. If it happened, and I've said this before, and I pardon, and I hope I'm pardoned for boring you by saying things more than once, but sometimes there's only one answer. I would be delighted if it happened all at once. There's nothing about being wrong that bothers a scientist. If you're wrong, that lets the scientific world know just as much as if you were right. So say, okay, scratch that. We better go back to the drawing board on this one. You got that one wrong. But I simply don't think that it adds up, that, you know, it's the same for all of us as it is for the planet. The planet has to go according to its, you know, time. And we have to go according to our time. And I don't think the two are substantively related. But they just happen at the same time.
I think that's an excellent explanation, Carla, because I see this discussion a lot at the Bring Forth Forum, and people often refer to the harvest, not seeming to remember that, as you said, there's two harvests. So I think that really is clarifying what you just explained.
Thanks. Yeah, it's something that a lot of people get hooked up on. They really do. It's a hang-up for a lot of people, and I'm glad to dive in there and help stir the waters a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm. So I hope a lot of people listen to this show. We just have a few minutes left, but just maybe rather than going into another question, which I don't think we have time for, just a little, I'd like to just comment a little further on that same topic. There's quite a buzz going on right now in the community, just in the, you know, New Age community and the conspiracy theorists community and all of that, with this supposedly this power elite is, there's going to be this mass arrest and all this stuff. And it kind of reminds me of the buzz, several other buzzes that have happened over the years when they said, oh, there's going to be a mass landing on this date, or there's going to be this or that. And what do you think about the wisdom of relying on something like that, on a prophecy that, or a prediction by some insider supposedly who has all this inside knowledge and is saying that this and this is going to happen, and everybody's waiting and watching with bated breath, you know?
I think very little of it. I mean, you have to listen to everybody and see what they have to say, see if you vibrate back. To me, when people begin giving out specific information like that, it's an indication that they have been, that their polarity has been attacked and successfully, and that they now are channeling a mixed polarity contact. And by mixed polarity, I mean some is positively oriented and some is negatively oriented. Now, the reason that positively oriented people tend to stay away from exact predictions is that until they happen, they're probability vortices. This could happen is basically what it's, what something is, you're looking at. I wonder if it's going to rain. This could happen. Well, it's 30%, it's 90%, you know. It could be 90% and still not happen. It could be a 30% chance and happen like crazy, and you could be, you know, up to your knees in hailstones. So the no one has the information about exact dates, because in the spiritual world, there are no exact dates. It's all in right now. And when it happens, it's now. And when it hasn't happened yet, it's not now. That's a terribly hard thing to explain, really. And it has to do with the fact that global time, you are in the middle of all the universes that ever were and ever are in time-space, and everything happens at the very instant before you go on to worship the Creator elsewhere. And when you look back on it, and as so far as you can look back on it at the moment that you transfer into eighth density and timelessness, that's all that ever happened. That one instant is where everything happened. So that's the time I'm talking about, not linear time in which you just have 1, 2, 3, 4.
So I guess the same could be true. I mean, even this, in this particular case, it's not even a channeled information. It's someone who's claiming to be the insider to all this information, but yet there still seems to be this perception that, oh, wow, this person's giving us this information, and we're going to have this savior come in. And in this case, it's the ETs coming in and you know,
yeah,
saving us.
What you have to realize is that in order to keep a person that is doing well in his spiritual life from doing well, and all that is necessary is that he be distracted from it. Now, one good way to distract somebody is to give him a couple of, you know, prophecies like that. Will they come true? Will they not come true? You start thinking about that. Then, you know, what you're thinking about that tends to alter what actually happens, you know, and it's never a good idea, because usually people are afraid of what's going to happen, which is why they ask the question. And if I hear that fear coming in, I just won't answer a question. You know, that's how I protect against it. It's the only way to protect against it. But time is so far from being a linear thing that it really almost can't be talked about. But I do think that there are times that regularly turn, and there is a clock universe. It's just that our clock is not the same as the clock for that planet. I mean, where did we come from in the first place? You know, if we're wanderers, do we follow that set of rhythms, or if we come elsewhere to here and we give everything up and become citizens here, then do we follow this new parameter that has been given by moving to a separate planet? Well, I think so. So it gets to be a kind of confusing. But there's probably somebody working away in the red tape rooms of fourth density that says, I've got that for you. I have that for you. I do. And then he turns out and he says, oh, just a moment. This was indicated to be for fifth density negative. Never mind.
Yeah.
Time really is a confusing thing. Time is always like it plods terribly. You know, the minutes just so long for somebody who's waiting for something. And then if you're fearing that something will happen, time speeds up. It's just you can barely handle it at all. Excuse me, I better get Jim to talk here.
My only comment would be we have to remember what will matter in 10,000 years from now. We're looking for spiritual principles that matter now and forever. If the information being given out is like somebody, a conspiracy that's going to result in arrests and this, that, and the other, what does that really matter to us on our spiritual journey? Let's stay with the spiritual principles that will matter now and forever.
Okay, excellent. And I guess even if it's the opposite, I mean, it could be fear-inducing or it could be the opposite where you're, oh, I'll just sit back and let it happen. I don't have to do anything anymore. I don't have to work on my own spiritual journey because we're all going to get saved. You know, it could be the opposite, I guess. Either way, it could still be a distraction. So, well, speaking of time, we are actually no longer live, but it is still being recorded. So the people that come back and listen can still hear us. But we're going to go ahead and end the show. So thank you both for being with us. All right. And you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Reckert and Jim McCarty. Please visit llresearch.org, which is the archive website. Check out the Law of One material and channeling transcripts and much more. And bringforth.org, that's bring the number 4th.org, which is the LL Research community website. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. You can submit questions at bringforth.org. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday, July 6th at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern.